League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 535. It's the 18th of July, 2016. On the podcast today, Phalanx Group, that's FLX. CEO John Blanmeyer and Managing Director Jay Abbott discuss the company's preliminary results and their reorganization to provide an end-to-end solutions package in the world of cybersecurity, an ever-growing sector as everything moves online. And you have to have the relevant security, of course you do. And people are becoming aware of this. Also on the podcast, Doc Holliday, small cap aficionado there, talks about Ariane Silva, Barclay Energia, or Barclay Energy, on Zima Ventures, and EVR Holdings, which is EVRH. And today's penny stock with potential. I'm revisiting this. It's submitted about a month back, but it's about Asia Met. And because there was a broker note out last week, that I think is very relevant. So I'm updating this. Also today, I've got a new feature I'll be doing on a regular basis. The most followed stock on Vox Markets. And this will be updated every day. But it's worth looking at this company because when sentiment changes on a company, especially on AIM, and people start following it and put it on their radar, it's worth watching yourself. So I'll do that in a bit.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Blamey, Chief Executive Officer of Phalanx, and Jay Abbott, who's Managing Director, and that's ticker code FLX. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Really nice to be back.
Yeah, hey, Justin. Nice to meet you.
Now, we've not spoken with you, Jay, but we will in a second. First of all, John, you've had your results Saturday, preliminary results. So take us through some of the highlights there from the results, if you could. And also, in fact, before we get that, John, I we do have new listeners tuning in all the time, so I've jumped straight in here. But for them, can you give a background as to what Phalanx is all about first?
Yeah, of course. We are predominantly a cyber security and intelligence organization. We have within our group two main business divisions. One is Phalanx Cyber Defense, which provides a fully synchronized set of cyber security services. And the other is our Phalanx Intelligence Division, which holds Sterling Ascent, which is an extremely well-known brand in the business intelligence and political risk market. Those together bring a whole bunch of synergies, not least the ability to cross-sell into a very, very impressive FTSE 100, FTSE 250 client base.
Yeah, and we know it's a growing sector because as fast, it's almost like crime now has gone online, you know, like everything else. And so you have to be really fully positioned and aware of what's happening in these days. The biggest criminals are online, you know, and companies have to be aware of this. So you've had preliminary results out for today. Highlight a couple of things you'd like to talk to us about from that, John.
Well, first of all, I'd like to underscore the fact that the restructuring within the business in phase one, we're calling it phase one, is now complete. The investment into the cybersecurity infrastructure in phase one has been completed, which also includes the acquisition of Jay's business, Advanced Security Consulting. And now if you look at us from a financially stable point of view, we've got a very significantly reduced cash burn down to circa £50,000 per month. We have £1.28 million worth of cash in the bank as at the end of last month, and we have fast growing revenues both in cyber and in intelligence. So the outlook for the company from a financial perspective is incredibly strong, and I'm very pleased to say that we got a clean bill of health from the auditors saying that we have they have no concerns around us as a going concern. So that's a really good sign that we will not need to raise capital in the future for working capital requirements. In terms of the highlights, that have happened. Really, the huge amount of movement has been since March the 31st. So we placed £1 million worth of equity and £500,000 convertible loan in May. And this was to allow us to acquire Advanced Security Consulting, Jay's business, and I'll introduce you to Jay in a second, and allow us to start to move from just having a managed monitoring service, which has, you know, great opportunities in government, but to expand on that and put around that the whole wrap of other services which assist companies who might not be fully aware of the challenges that they face within the sort of cybersecurity environment. And that's now in place and it's starting to work really, really well. We're very pleased to see that in our outlook, the growth in cybersecurity will show very significant increases on last year's first half year performance, with the company looking to announce results in the half year of just over £1 million per annum and growing.
Okay, and I suppose, is it this reorganization, like you said there, the consultant side is also to almost educate and help companies be aware of the threat. Is that the case?
And that's absolutely the case, and that's why we've brought one of the UK's leading experts in this field, Jay Abbott, into our organisation. And at this point, I'd actually like to introduce Jay. Jay, who started ASC, or Advanced Security Consulting, grew it, or should I say, doubled the size of that business year on year for 3 years, looked to us exactly the sort of person, the catalyst that we needed to get in to take the cybersecurity business to the next level. And with that, I'd like to bring Jay in to talk about how that's working.
Yeah, Jay, exactly. Yeah, take us through, what did you do there at Advanced Security Consulting, and how will it help here, Phalanx?
No problem, Justin. So ASC primarily was a consulting and threat assessment organization. So we would work with clients in the initial stages to help them identify threats and risks within their networks, within their systems, and how they use technology. Once we'd help them do that, and we'd do that a multitude of different ways, from just sort of sitting down with them and sort of translating that complex technical threat landscape into their business, through to doing activities such as penetration testing to understand exactly what exposures their technology created for them. And then once we'd gone through that process, we'd work with them to actually develop a more secure environment. So we would help them with the architecture, with the technology, with their applications, with their systems, to make that fundamentally more secure. And then finally, as and when an incident occurred, we would step in and be the experts on call to help sort of clear up any problems that that were underway. So we sort of had three quarters of a whole, really. And the thing that we were missing was monitoring. So we'd been partnered with Phalanx for a number of years anyway. I knew John for quite some time. And it sort of seemed fairly obvious to the pair of us that working together would be a much stronger entity. So I brought sort of three quarters of the service offering, and the company already had the monitoring piece, which was the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so synergies here fit together really well, and now you can offer an end-to-end solution, and starting off consulting right through to monitoring, I suppose. Is that the case?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, fundamentally, we can work with the clients, as you mentioned earlier, to help them understand exactly what the problem is, help define that problem space for them, and then manage it. We can then put in the relevant monitoring so that they can be absolutely 100% sure that, you know, nothing's going to slip through the cracks, as it were. We're able to identify any issues in real time. And then, of course, we have the incident response capability. So when an issue has been identified, we're able to then go in and immediately clean up. So, you know, it really is a true end-to-end service and quite differentiated as such.
Yeah, and do companies get it? I mean, you know, not a month goes by when you hear about quite a big security breach somewhere, and that's just the issues that are reported. Because we understand it's a very sensitive issue, isn't it? When a big company with, you know, maybe holding money of other people or services of some kind, you know, when they are breached, they don't like to publicise it, do they?
Oh, no, not at all. No. Most breaches go completely, well, one of two variables. Most breaches either go unknown to the organisation, so they're not reporting it purely because they simply don't know it's occurred, and that's more often than not. And then the other is when it has occurred and they have identified it, there is obviously a massive reputational impact around that, possibly legislative impact with financial penalties, and you know, notifications hardly weighted in favour of it occurring. occurring. But what we are seeing now is legislation changing. And, you know, the legislation coming through at the minute around the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, has stipulations in there for breach notification. And it's something that's been in the US now for many, many, many years, mandatory breach notification with your tax filings. You know, it's so we are seeing a move towards this. Companies are going to have to know that they've been attacked. They're going to have to be able to actually detect it's occurred, properly respond, in the first instance, properly ensure as best they can that they are secure, and then, unfortunately, notify the world when an incident occurs.
I didn't know that. So, legally now, they have to... So, does it matter what size they are or who they are? I mean, they have to notify... the authorities that they've been breached. Is that the case?
It's not fully legal just yet. I'll caveat that, Justin. The legislation's coming in over a period of time. It's not sort of day one, right, everyone go. Yeah. But there are breach notification requirements around the new GDPR.
Wow, so obviously that will help you a huge amount. And so how is business at the moment? Are you seeing a pickup? Is it the same? What's going on?
Growth is steady. We see, and certainly if I think back over the last sort of 4 years, growth has, you know, continued to increase every single month. If I go back, you know, throughout my career, I've been doing this over 25 years now. And if I sort of go back 15 years, it was a bit of a hard sell, I'm not going to lie. You know, your buyers were very specialist. But sort of 10 years ago, it started to become a thing in business. And over the last 5 years, it's really just stepped up. You know, everyone understands this, even down into consumer level, people now start to get it. You know, I was listening to the radio on the drive down to the office, and on Kiss FM, we've got Cyber Streetwise talking about hackers and patching your portable systems. You know, it's become very much common knowledge. It's become, you know, a subject that people do understand now, and that can only work in our favour.
Yeah, and I see you're down with the kids here listening to Kiss FM anyway.
I like to think so.
You're in touch with the modern, you know, people there. All right, marvellous stuff. Well, you know, it all seems going well. Let's go back to John. John, as a summary there, if you can give us 3 points or 3 reasons why an investor should add Phalanx to their Vox Markets watchlist, please.
Yeah, Justin, absolutely. Well, again, I'm going to repeat some of the takeaways I gave the last time we talked, and they haven't really changed. I mean, first of all, we're in a huge growth opportunity. The industry is accelerating away, and I think the barriers to entry for organizations is going to become higher and higher because more consolidation is going to take place, more grouping together of like-minded businesses in this space is going to occur, and therefore there are going to be relatively fewer but larger players in this space who are going to be taking, you know, staking a claim over the market over the next couple of coming years. So it is a bit of a land grab. So, you know, we're very distinct in the fact that we're one of the few organizations on AIM that gives investors an opportunity to get into that growth story. Second of all, we're well placed, as you've heard from Jay, to address that gap in the market. It has become a much more well-known subject matter, but there's still a huge amount of understanding that's required in corporates, and that's where Jay and his team are able to go in there, get alongside the client, get them to understand where they are, get them to a good place, and then transition them to managed services. So, number two, we're well placed to address this market. And thirdly, we have that scalable managed service platform, which was so interesting to Jay to bring his business and ours together. And that, again, bringing all of that together, giving that differentiated end-to-end service, again, creates a huge opportunity for us in the marketplace and gives a huge opportunity for investors to get in the ground floor of something that's addressing the real issues in the cybersecurity market. So those are my 3 things to take away, Justin.
Marvellous. Thanks, guys, for speaking to me, and hopefully speak again very soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
Joining me on the podcast right now, small cap aficionado authority, Doc Holliday. You all right, fella?
Morning, Justin. How are you today?
I'm all right, yeah. Nice to meet you. I mean, we've spoken lots of times, never physically met until the Big Gibbs momentous event last Thursday. I understand you stayed there a lot later than me. In fact, I saw the RNSs came out on Friday morning, and I thought, where's Doc? He's normally up there. So I just said, are you awake? And the first thing I got from you was, dear God.
Yeah, it was a bit of a dear God moment. You know, I think I woke up sort of bollock old face down on the bed in a hotel without any idea how I got there. So that was quite a wake up for me. But yeah, it was great. It was good to meet. It was good to catch up with lots and lots of investors. There were a lot of people there that were shared the same kind of enthusiasm that both you and I have for the stock market, and it was good to actually meet up with yourself and with a number of other people that I speak to you quite regularly, but also to meet new people and investors that perhaps are sort of voyeurs within the market and watch a lot and perhaps don't participate as much. So to actually just, you know, kind of hang out and chat to those kind of guys was a great deal of enjoyment for me also. So yeah, it was great. It was an all-round Bonza evening.
Yeah, it's good. So you had time. I talked to some of the companies there, but in an interview, you know, session. But did you get a chance to talk to some of the companies, you know, just in a social environment or what?
I think I spoke to them all twice, but I only have a memory that allows me to remember speaking to half of them once. So yeah, I did. I obviously had a quick chat. Some of it was quite brief. I spent the vast majority of the evening sort of chatting with investors. There were some really, really decent stories there. I think in your weekend podcast, you referred to a guy from Merthyr Tydfil, and I had a chat to him, and he'd lost a little bit of money on the market, and then he'd had a really good run on another one, and he was quite chipper about that. And I think he seems to have got to grips with how to sort of navigate the choppy waters of AIM, and he seemed quite enthusiastic and excited that he'd made 10 times his money on a company that we talked about quite a lot. So that was a great story, that. And there were others like it, but the kind of common theme I found is people have to lose. They all go through the same cycle of loss, exasperation, and even a level of desperation at times. But, you know, once you sort of can work out how this thing works. Momentum is 8/10 of the law on AIM. And being able to kind of understand the motivation and agenda that everybody is going to have naturally within this market, then you can make a pretty penny from the market.
Yeah, well, I did tweet out on the weekend just saying, you know, trading or investing, I suppose, but especially on AIM, you know, it is a trade. You learn, you get better, and you have to learn by your mistakes, you know, and those mistakes can be costly. And hopefully they don't wipe you out, so you can still play the game. But like I say, you have to lose to know where you're going wrong, don't you, really? And so I tweeted out, so making a big return on your first investment sometimes is a bad thing, because I spoke to one of the guys there and he said, oh, you know, I thought it was quite easy. And he went big on the next trade and he lost a lot of his money, you know, and so he just thought it was an easy game. And it's not, it's almost like it does, you know, entice you in. And so making a big win on the first one is almost not good, is it?
No, you know what, actually, that's it's great that you mentioned that, because that's something that I used to really talk about a lot. It's people who come into the junior markets. I did it myself. I was invested in blue chip companies as a form of saving money, a pension, if you will. And once I'd sort of took the risk and ventured down onto AIM, I had a bit of traction in a couple of companies, and I actually had about 250% gain on one that had gone at that point in time quite heavily into. And I just thought, this is the life. You know, why have I been poodling about in the blue chip companies for such a long time? And then it all went horribly wrong. So you know, that experience wasn't just having a decent trade on one, but then I actually then went heavy into the second one, and that did well. So it was like, you know, it compounded the kind of ease and excitement that I'd got, which I actually believe then was one of the big catalysts as to why I held it when it went against me so much. And there were, you know, there was even examples of why I should have been cut in that position and I just didn't. And I think that was exactly what you refer to there. It seemed easy at the beginning. The second time it seemed even easier, and as a consequence I held it even longer and took even more heat on that position. And over the course of time, naturally, it all worked out well in the end, and it was a great learning curve, and one that I'm glad that I've experienced. But as I say, it wasn't too hot, right? You know, back at that point in time. But yeah, we've all got to move on, and you know, I think if you can survive the first 12 months, that's the important bit, because most people blow their accounts in the first 12 months. You know,
yeah,
and statistics are against us from the off.
Okay. All right. So let's, if you can, sort of highlight three companies you're going to remember talking to at the momentous events.
So I had a quick chat to Ariane Silva. They were there. I spoke to Jim. I think he thought I'd caught him offside. I'd introduced myself to him downstairs while I was talking to a couple of investors. When I got upstairs, he sort of thought I'd been trying to trick him by not introducing who I was. Maybe I was slurring my words, or he'd got cloth in his ears. But either way, we got over that little hurdle. We had a chat briefly about the company, where they were up to. Naturally, there was quite a lot of interest and excitement around this one. I believe that the company are headed to get that deal over the line. He mentioned a little bit about one of the directors who was really quite focused on all of the criteria and corporate governance that one has to cover when putting a deal like this through. Obviously, Jim has had some association with the directors at TMN and that business, so naturally they want to make sure that all of the T's are crossed, I's are dotted, and that one is processed as it should be. The question that I do recall speaking to Jim about is, what price was silver when you put this deal together? It was $14. It was $14 an ounce. It was going to be profitable at that level, extremely profitable, some might say. And for it to be up by sort of 40% higher, if my calculation is right, maybe it's 30%, but to be up dramatically higher, that deal is going to be far more lucrative should it be signed. Now, the obvious caveat is, you know, those who want to exercise caution may want to wait for the deal to be put through and announced. Those of you that are risk takers or speculative within this space, who look at that company and perhaps believe the share prices sort of all the way back to the beginning, which I believe is the case, have been taking a bit of a punt on it. They were taking a punt on it last week before the event, and I wouldn't have come away from that thinking that people may, you know, want to reverse that decision. I think the deal, given the fact that the price of silver has been accelerating up dramatically from $14, means not only is should the price be up on the back of that deal, but it should be up a fair bit more given the silver price.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And any other companies?
Oh, of course. Yeah. So Berkeley Energy, they were obviously in the house. You guys know that one well, so I won't touch on it too much. The guys from Berkeley Energy, Paul Atherley, etc., are pretty well furnished in this space. They come with this idea about a year or so back. I remember Tom introducing me to Paul. I phoned him, we had a chat. I was going to write an article about it. I'll never forget it. I took notes. I rarely do that. And I never got round to it. And what a shame that was, because it all sort of seemed too good to be true. I think I covered it on one of the podcasts. It might have been with you, may have been elsewhere. But I remember me saying to him, this, it looks too good to be true. If this finance doesn't come in, it's going to kind of completely fragment and flop. And if you get things going, it's going to go crazy. And he said, well, exactly. And just looking at AIM so much, I kind of just couldn't bring myself to get involved. And what a shame that is. And they seem to be in a great place. They seem to have a great outlook. There's a real buzz around Berkeley Energy, and people seem to have liked it. So to move on from Berkeley Energy, I spoke with the guys from N4 Pharma and Onzima. Nigel was on form as ever. I think the big sort of thing that the big misconception, I think perhaps that's that in the wider markets, for people who've not followed the story, is just how this couple of million pound valuation comes to pass. For me, I think it's ridiculous how cheap it is, and hence why I'm a buyer and also a holder of the stock. What may not have come across, because we know that accounts and things like that are always lagging. So the last lot of news that the company put out referred to the Shell business coming out of what was UTN, Ultima Network, and becoming Onzima Ventures, and obviously then going on and doing the business with M4 Pharma. So we know it's all happened, but when you put news out, it's always lagging behind, 6 months behind or whatever. The company have gone out, they've traded in the market with a trading arm, a trading division. They've used the cash from that to cover the PLC running costs, advisors, nomads, listings. The directors of the business are taking very little, if nothing, out of this company. It's running, literally is running on about $7,000 a month, $8,000 a month, and that's absolutely nothing in comparator to what you would find elsewhere. The reason they can do it is they're quite a small group. The two directors have worked within the corporate advising area, nomads, broking, etc., as corporate advisors. So what you find is if you've got that background as a QC, you've got the insight of how the market works. So they've used the trading money to cover the PLC running costs, they've built up a warrant bank, and they've got a core asset in N4 Pharma. Nigel, when I sat and spoke to him a few weeks ago and again at the event, reiterated the point that when he got Oxford Biopharma from £400,000 or £500,000 company to £50 million, to make that step from £50 million to £500 million is a really big and arduous task. For him, he's not getting any younger, he's a silver fox. He wanted to deploy his money into something that he felt he could guide in the right direction and set him up sort of into his retirement. He put his money into N4 Pharma. He's actually put quite a bit of cash supporting the listed company. Onsum as well is a 16% shareholder. And he honestly believes getting a company from $1 million to $10 million is far easier than it is from getting $50 million to $500 million. Hence why he's got involved with M4, put his own money in, and why he's got involved with Onsum and put his own money into that. So there's no bigger testament than skin in the game. And that for me is why I support it and took the time to chat to them. So, you know, it's a good story. There were other companies there, EVR Holdings. They've got the technology where you put a virtual screen to your eyes. You can pay a fee to go to a virtual event. So if you can't get in to go and watch your favourite singer, Britney Spears, Justin, you can put this headset on, you can pay a tenner, you can sort of stand in your own front room, and you can sit as if you're at the event itself and enjoy it. And that seems to have quite a lot of people interested. It's quite a quirky thing, so they were obviously catching the attention also.
Yeah, I'd prefer that. I prefer that than actually going to a gig. I mean, why would you have to, you know, if you're at a gig, so you miss the atmosphere. No, I think having to push through, like, you know, 1,000 people just to go to the toilet, it's not part of the atmosphere. And I think if you're in your own house, you can go to the fridge, get a beer out, you know, watch it. It's ideal for me, that would be. If I want to see a gig, I'll see it in the comfort of my own home. Lovely. So, yeah. And it's one of those things, one of those technologies we know is taking off. And so it's almost that you've got to put it on your watch list, because, you know, it could be all or nothing. It could be, you know, massive. Or it may not take off, you never know. But, you know, it's worth keeping an eye on companies like that, you know, because it could be the next big thing. Anyway, lovely, Doc. Thanks, fella, for chatting, and speak next week.
Take care. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is Asia Met Resources. And ticker's ARS. What does the company do? Fast-tracking to development and production the pre-feasibility stage BKM copper mine on the Indonesian island of Kalimantan. Now, following the PEA, the BKM project has shown the potential for developing a robust, low strip ratio, low capital intensive copper project with low operating costs, strong cash flow generation capacity, and significant upside potential through further resource growth and a strong underlying commodity prices in the future. How many shares does the company have in issue? 622 million, much of which is in old paper form. What's the current price and market cap of the company? It's, let me just check this, I'll check right now, bear with me, 2.5, I think, pence is the, 2.375 is the share price, and the market cap is 13.6 million. So check that out there. How much cash or debt does the company have? Cash, around $2.5 million, I think that's Aus dollars. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, management track record of taking small exploration assets through to development into production, for example, but not limited to Oxyon Limited, which was taken from a market cap of $3 million to a pan-Asian diversified commodity producer, which was sold 8 years later for a sum of $5.6 billion. Management has a strategic awareness and experience to identify projects with very strong fundamentals and future cash flows to justify significant uplifts for investors. Reason two. It's a long sentence there. Strong assets, not only BKM, which even at the smaller of Asian Met's copper assets, and not including the large one, Bhutan Copper Growth Gold Option, has delivered an outstanding PEA, showing an NPV of $204 million, an internal rate of return of 38.7, extremely low C1 costs of $1.28 per pound, and gross revenues over the life of the mine of US dollars, $1.27 billion, calculated at future copper price forecasts. Also, where the market is going into a predicted structural deficit in the future supply of copper. I read another article today actually saying about the Chilean, one of the biggest producers of copper in the world, Chile, how they spent more on exploration but getting less of a resource back from doing that. So it sort of plays into that story that we'll be in copper deficit in a couple of years' time. Number three. Company has a history of delivering on plans and strategy and with a strong work program, a host of in-flight corporate items and several strategic conversations taking place, a strong pipeline of news flow to deliver upon for investors over the next year, including a major feasibility study work program at BKM, 4 live license renegotiations, and applications soon to hopefully hear about positively, strategic initiatives around commercialization or finding strategic partners for all the company assets, plus new corporate initiatives to including a continued exploration of its new super high-grade zone named Baroy. So those check that out. You can see that on the website here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Just click my blog and you can see that there. Okay, here's a new feature. It's very simple. Today's most followed company on Vox is Conroy Gold and Natural Resources. CGNR. Now, if sentiment changes here and lots of people are following, it's worth following yourself, I'd say. Put it on your watch list. So, CGNR, Conroy Gold, and Natural Resources. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.